Well, hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
And today we're going to do something a little bit different. You know, we are all about the MSR here, as you guys know. But we decided we kind of wanted to do a little bit of a deep dive into the mythology of the X-Files, which is going to be interesting coming from us. I don't know how well-versed are you on the mythology, Jen?
Not as well-versed as I should be, probably. I mean, I've obviously watched all the episodes many times, and I always found the mythology episodes super, super exciting, but I still don't understand it fully after all this time. So I think that what doing this deep dive that we're doing is going to be super beneficial for me.
I think a lot of it is going to be fun. And I mean, doing it in order, and we're just going to address all the Myth Arc episodes, two by two, or maybe three if it's a three-parter. Today we're going to be talking about the pilot and Deep Throat. Yep. But before we get into that, we would like to read some listener feedback.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
So our first tweet this week is from a new listener called, on Twitter at least, Prof. Casey, perhaps? Hello, Prof. Casey. Thank you for joining us. Prof. Casey says, this is the first podcast I've ever listened to. Like the first podcast of any kind, I do believe, which is like, thank you. Thank you for using us as your gateway to podcasting. Loving it. Thank you. One thing regarding the conversation in the bed, quote unquote, I always feel like Scully might feel a bit guilty because she's the hesitant one and left him. So she's insecure, which contributes to these conversations. Thoughts? Well, we do have thoughts as usual, Prof. Casey. Did you want to start on that, Annie?
I mean, yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. I think we kind of, I don't know, I don't really remember what we said. We've talked about plus one so much, but I'm pretty sure we covered that, the idea of the hesitancy coming from Scully's side, because, yeah, it's pretty clear that she's the one who left him. So I agree completely.
Yeah, definitely. I think that I think that it's kind of like Mulder's kind of already put himself out there, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I think he feels like she knows that he's ready to resume the relationship. He's never expressed a desire not to. And so the ball is in her court. And so, yeah, I think that does definitely contribute to the dynamic throughout season 10 and 11, but certainly in that conversation.
I absolutely do think that, and I feel like, yeah, like we said, it's like she's kind of fishing.
Because yeah.
She's still insecure. This has no idea where they stand.
Yeah.
I think the reason, and I don't know if we brought this up, we might have, the reason people were so put off and thrown off by this conversation, again, was I think that because this took place directly after this, it was so confusing because we were like, well, wait, they were back and they were living together. And she said our home and we thought they were back together. I really, truly, honestly believe that that made everybody so confused that it just threw a wrench in everything. So if you look at the conversation sort of out of context, I think it works a lot better. But anyway.
I totally agree with you. On that note, from Kathy G, hey, Kathy, she says, I loved your discussion of plus one. I didn't appreciate the bed conversation at first, but Jen, that's me, suggested a while back that I focus on their faces and not on their words. And that helped me get what they were really saying. Thanks, Kathy, for remembering that, because I clearly forgot that I had said that and completely forgot that concept. So thank you for giving me a chance to reiterate it now. Focus on their faces and not their words, which is actually never a bad advice when we're talking about a conversation between Mulder and Scully, because their body language tends to be a lot more accurate than the words, and no more so than in that scene.
I absolutely think that's a really good point. And I think even probably more so with Mulder in this scene.
Definitely.
Yeah.
His body language, his facial expressions are screaming.
Like, people are so mad when she says, what if you meet someone? But if you watch the way he reacts to her saying that, it's like,
it's awesome.
What? Like, I mean, it's really actually very, I want to say compelling. That's probably not the right word, but it's.
I think it's compelling.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I think if people, they're very busy listening to the words and they're not really watching or paying attention to the facial expressions and body language, then they're going to miss a lot of it. So yes.
There's a lot of words in that conversation and they are kind of confusing. So I can see why you'd get kind of bogged down just trying to understand what's being said and you'd miss the body language. So yeah, maybe watch it with the sound off occasionally.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And because I
mean,
that's
a really good idea.
Isn't it? Oh, thanks. I discovered this by accident because sometimes I'm at work and don't tell my boss, but sometimes, you know, people post fantastic videos on Twitter and I just have to watch a little bit of it while I'm sitting at my desk, but of course with the sound off.
Yeah.
But it's amazing what you can get out of conversations between Mulder and Scully with the sound off.
Yeah.
So that is a fun activity. So I recommend it to all. Mm-hmm. Monica File fan. Hey, Monica. She says, I'm halfway through, but if I don't mention this now, I'll forget. My headcanon for the can you hold me line is that both Mulder and Scully in the past, on rare occasions when they needed the extra emotional support, would say that to each other, straight out or subtly, but maybe just me. I don't think it is just you, Monica. I personally had never thought of it that way, but I love the idea.
Yeah.
And I love your headcanon. What did you think about that, Annie?
I like that a lot. It hadn't really occurred to me, but I like it and I can put it into my headcanon. I actually wanted to say this because I just thought of this today. My son, who just turned 3 the other day, he randomly just came up to me out of nowhere and just said, can you hold me? And I was like, ooh, I had a little bit of a minor meltdown, but of course I said, I can do that, buddy.
Of course you did. happy birthday, Harrison. Adorable.
Yeah.
Okay, and moving on to our final tweet for this week from Peacenik Zero. Hey, Peacenik. Just got to the part where you're... All right. Oh, gosh. Okay. Just got to the part where you're about to start talking about the infamous face-wiping scene. I had to stop listening there because my kids were about to get into the car. Not quite ready to explain the intricacies of Mulder's pussy-eating prowess to the littles.
I gotta say, we've done many, many episodes, Jen, but this has made it all worth it. Just hearing you read that.
It totally has. I feel like this is it's never gonna get better than the moment when I got to say pussy-eating prowess on a podcast. So thank you, Peacenik, for that.
Yeah, we should have given a little bit of a warning, but
you know what? I don't know. Do people not know us by now?
Yeah, everybody needs to learn the lesson that Peacenik clearly knew already. Well done, Jen. Yeah. I must admit, I put this in the pile because I just wanted to hear Jen read it. So
I know, and I put it in the pile really because I wanted to say it. So now I have, luckily this is podcasting, so people cannot see how red my face is right now, but I am embracing the opportunity. And I'm just going to briefly mention that in the original tweet, Peacenik initially, by mistake, put, explain the inaccuracies of Mulder's pussy-eating prowess, which led to a whole other discussion on Twitter, I must say, which was amusing in and of itself.
People were like, what inaccuracies do you refer to? None such can exist.
And how would you know?
And she was like, typo, my bad, typo.
That was hilarious. So that's Twitter for you. It was great in its corrected version and hilarious in its original version. So
indeed,
both gave us entertainment in two different ways. So thank you, Peacenik. Thank you, everybody, for tweeting and responding to us. Thank you to our longtime listeners. Thank you very much to our new listeners. We appreciate you guys. We love you. Thank you for your feedback. It is always appreciated. Please feel free to tweet at us anytime at XFD Podcast on Twitter. Join us there for all the hijinks that go on. And on with this week's show.
Mulder, the internet is not good for you.
Okay, today we are going to talk about the myth arc. Jen, are you ready?
I am ready for the myth arc. Let's dive in.
I want to kind of find out what your overall feel is on the mythology in general. Like, I guess not in terms of, oh, well, I hate it, or, oh, well, I like it. But I just mean in terms of like a grasp, like if you had to if you had to pick like a percentage of the mythology that you grasp, what would that number be?
Shoot, I would say, okay, because it's me, I'm going to give a complicated answer.
Mm-hmm.
I would say probably for like the first 3 seasons, maybe, I'd say I grasped it 90%. And from maybe season 4 onwards, I'm going to say more like 60%. At some point, my eyes started to glaze over, probably at exactly the same time that other people's eyes were glazing over with black oil. And I started to get a little overwhelmed and a little kind of like I didn't care that much anymore. I kind of started to feel like I don't know where this is even going anymore. For the first three seasons, I felt like this is going somewhere and it's important for me to pay attention. And after a while, I don't know what happened to me, but I started to kind of not care that much about the mythology, even though I had been quite keen on it for the first few seasons for sure. But I found it less compelling as time went on, which is certainly not to say I found the show less compelling, because I loved every other aspect of the show and I still enjoyed the mythology episodes. I just kind of let them gently wash over me when like parts of the plot would come along that I didn't quite understand. Yeah. I'd be like, okay, yep, Scully looks really pretty this week. And I didn't get too hung up on the fact that I didn't really understand the whole thing. But I realize now that I did have a tendency to tune out a little bit during those kind of myth arc related conversations, that if I didn't quite follow something, I just like zoned out. And yeah. To this day, I still zone out sometimes when I'm watching those episodes. I have to really concentrate to try to follow the details of the mythology. I know that the details are there to be found. And certainly the more I watch and the more I try to be open-minded and try to be more critical about how the whole thing fits together, I see that there is a greater, more unified arc than perhaps I gave it credit for while it was airing. The fact that it was airing over 9 years probably had something to do with it, because you'd always have those long breaks in the summer, and there's always a few months between Myth Arc episodes because they only ever seem to air during the ratings sweeps months. And so I would tend to lose track a little bit. So I'm looking really excited to sort of watch the episodes a little closer together. In watching the pilot this week, of course, I took Scully's words to heart when she says, the answers are there. You just have to know where to look. And yeah. I think that's probably true of the mythology. And I am keen to learn to know where to look, because I know you, Annie, have a better grasp on this than I do.
I think you're going to be surprised. I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised at how much it actually does hinge together. And I mean, I think, you know, again, I'm always here to, you know, defend the show, blah, 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 blah. But I really do think that while the mythology is vast, it's a lot simpler than people give it credit for. I think that what pisses people off is that it kind of evolves, because it has to, because that's the nature of television. So what was happening in season three, it's still happening in season six, just in a different form. Like, I feel like that's kind of what we're dealing with. And I feel like when they, you know, originally conceived of this show, I'm sure that, you know, obviously we will get to talk about this during season two, when Scully's abduction happens and how they had to take a turn. But I mean, they had a completely different idea of kind of what the show was going to be over the years. And I think that for me personally, I feel like up through like maybe the end of season six, I have a pretty good grasp of all of the mythology. I feel like I have a pretty good grasp, but like in terms of like, it doesn't bother me. Like, I feel like it drives a lot of people crazy, like crazy, because they're like, it doesn't make any sense. And I wonder, first of all, how often these people have rewatched, because I think it really benefits from rewatching. Like, a lot of the time I'll watch an episode that's like in season three and they'll talk about the 2012 invasion, you know, which seemed to come from nowhere in season nine, if you hadn't been paying attention, you know, but it's there, you know what I mean? Like, as you go through these episodes, you'll be like, oh, wow, they really did talk about that. And I think I think that's interesting. Admittedly, I think after Mulder left the show, the mythology got a little out of hand. And I mean, I've always thought, I still think it's graspable. It's just not as compelling. Like, I feel like once they started to make sort of Scully and William and Mulder kind of the central plot of the mythology, that's kind of where I think it lost a lot of people. And I think that's a pretty popular opinion. But but we'll see. I think it'll be interesting to go through it and see where it actually does seem to start to fall apart for us.
Yeah, that's all really strong points. And I especially agree with what you say about how it had to evolve. I mean, you can't keep doing the same story for nine seasons. You have to bring in some new elements. It can still have the same base elements there, the same fundamental foundation, but you got to add some new stuff, or you don't want to have the same episode in 20 different versions over 9 seasons. Right. So it makes sense that they brought in more and more things. I think perhaps I was not as open-minded about the new things as I should have been. But yeah, it makes total sense because you got to go somewhere with it. I mean, right. they weren't picturing 9 seasons when they were writing the pilot. I'm sure of that.
No.
They did not have like a big plan to last like 200 episodes, which is totally understandable.
And I'll hear a lot of people say things like, well, whatever happened to the bees? And I'll be like, well, they're fucking done with the bees. Like, who cares? Like, that's kind of my reaction. Like, we don't need the bees anymore. They've served their purpose. Like, why? Who cares?
We
like,
care about the bees.
I don't. I mean, I understand what the purpose of the bees was. It's like, I don't need any more bees. Like, and I feel like it was just one of those things where, like, I think literally the last we saw of the bees was in Fight the Future at the end when they're in the desert. And it's purposeful that they leave it like that because they want you to be afraid. They want you to be like, those fucking bees are still out there. Like, you know, and to me, that is the X-Files. So I'm not like sitting around in season 7 wondering where the bees are. And I feel like this is something that a lot of people do. Like, they're like, well, whatever happened to this and that? Like, yeah, a lot of the elements, obviously, like the abductions and black oil and things like that, carry on throughout the entire series. But there are a lot of things that can be dismissed as just one of those mythical elements that are meant to scare, or a red herring, or, you know, a number of other things. Your mileage may vary. A lot of people may really care about the bees and want to know what happened to them.
I really care.
Yeah, and I don't. So, I mean, when I say, like I grasp that, like, I grasp what I need of it, and then I'm able to move on. That's kind of where I'm at. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a really valid point, too, that, I mean, The X-Files has never been about neat endings. Mm-mm. On any level, whether that's about a Monster of the Week episode or if it's about an element of the myth arc. It's very X-Files not to have a neat, tied-up explanation about the bees.
Absolutely. Or anything, for that matter. Yeah.
Yeah, or anything, really. I mean, that's
I mean,
really
on a show
anything.
Where we don't get answers to anything by design, I think they answered quite a bit. And that's kind of my sort of overall take. And you do have to think that back when this aired in 1993 or when it started, you know, people, they didn't have the benefit of rewatch. You know, you weren't going to rewatch it. You were going to watch it once and then maybe catch it in syndication, you know, and then maybe you would tape it on your Betamax or whatever you got. That's way. I think that was a decade prior, but you get what I'm saying. They have to repeat these elements over and over, or they have to kind of up the ante because they have to remind you, like, remember this thing that happened, and because they are going to expect that you have forgotten. But Scully's absolutely right. She's absolutely right that the answers are there. You just have to know where to look, and that's what we're going to do with this episode today. And let's start with the pilot. What do you think, Jim?
Take me to the pilot.
Let's take us to the pilot.
Take me to the pilot. Lead me to the tame. Take me to the pilot. I'm not a stranger. Take me to the pilot. Lead me to the tame. Take me to the pilot. I'm not a stranger.
So when the X-Files started, they obviously were dealing a lot more with the sort of traditional alien abduction story. And I remember we were talking about this last week when you were mentioning Conduit. I think, like, you know, EBE, Fallen Angel, there are a few in season 1 that sort of deal with just this very simple idea of, hey, aliens are out there and they're fucking taking people up in the sky, right?
Yeah.
That simple. And I mean, that's kind of where it started. And I think we both agree that the pilot is a really good pilot.
Yes.
Yeah, like, I think that, they, you know, it we're not really talking about Mulder and Scully or the MSR, but they really developed... those characters they had right off the bat, this is what we're going to deal with. We have a skeptic. We have somebody who's just believing in anything. And we have these mystical elements that we as viewers can see are actually happening. But Scully can't see it, but we can't really blame her because, you know, she's just on the other side of the hill. You know, she can't see it.
there's so much of that.
She's always on the other side of the hill, you know.
She's always on the other side of the hill.
Her little legs can't get her over the hill. So we cannot blame Scully's little legs. But I did want to talk about, let's just dive right in. I think that right off the top, we're talking about the marks of these abductions, the implants, and obviously these are all things that that keep going on throughout the entire series, but they do evolve and change. And I wanted to ask what your opinion on that was, because my theory on that is that we obviously are dealing with real alien abductions and abductions that are by the government. Two different types of abductions are happening over the course of the series. And so I think, do you agree with that?
I'm not even sure if I do. I hadn't even thought about it that way before. I always thought they were all just alien abductions, to be honest. I mean, I thought the government was involved.
Are you serious?
I am. I mean, as far as the abductions go.
No. I mean, Scully is very clearly abducted by Smoking Man and the government. We're going to have fun with this, Jen. I'm excited. I feel like I'm going to educate you.
I do understand that she does, eventually say I was taken by men, but then it seems like it's always left a little ambiguous to me whether that's for sure the case. But we'll get into certainly that as we get through those elements.
Yes, but I think that the clues are kind of there that they're different enough. Like the chip was made in Japan. Like, she's studying the chip, and I know we're way ahead of ourselves. But that's kind of how I always understood it, was that. And I thought it was kind of beautiful that I think Mulder is actually getting really abducted by aliens, and Scully is taken by all the things that she can prove, all the things that she can be like, hey, this is actually what happened. Like the same thing that happened to Scully is probably the same thing that happened to Samantha. She wasn't really taken by aliens. She was taken by the government. She was taken by men. I think that's kind of set up right off the top by these sort of different, there's all kinds of different looking marks, like the marks at the beginning, we don't really ever see again. I'm trying to think, and by the way, this mythology stuff is completely spoiler heavy. So if you're listening to this trying to be not spoiled, don't listen to this.
Get yourself to the pilot, people. Watch the pilot and Deep Throat. You got to. Those are really strong episodes.
Well, I just mean I'm going to even begin to talk about things that they bring up in the revival that they carry through. Like we talk about.
Absolutely.
We talk about the scoop marks, that we see on Sveta in My Struggle 1. And then Mulder apparently has the scoop marks. We never get to see them, but they're mentioned. We can start to kind of draw these comparisons and conclusions from what sort of abductions are happening. This is all stuff that you can kind of parse out on your own. But I mean, I just think it's interesting to note that they're different. Like even the implant is different. It's a nose implant. The one that the little thing up Ray Soames' nose. We don't really see that again.
We don't. Although interestingly enough, that is the location of Scully's cancer, even though her chip is in her neck.
Correct. Yes.
Which I find interesting.
That is really interesting. That's an interesting point.
I don't know. I just find that very interesting because I'm interested in everything to do with Scully's abduction, even though I'm starting to understand now that I have a dim understanding of who was actually responsible for it.
It's okay.
I think it's because it's partly because, folks like me that watched it live as it was airing, for years we were given to believe that it was aliens. There was no reason to believe otherwise. It was only until quite late on that we started to get really clear indications that not have been aliens. I mean, the clues were there.
I don't necessarily think that's true, but if I ever come off as a smug asshole, please let me know.
I have a sound that I make or something just to alert you.
No, you just say, hey, cut it out.
All right.
It's left murky intentionally, but I'm just saying with Scully particularly, I feel there's enough evidence to show that Mulder's finding all of this stuff. Like he's finding it in the government facilities. Like there's enough evidence to sort of indicate. And I'll be interested to hear what people have to say, because that's kind of the way I always understood it. And if people understand it differently, I would love you to tell me that I'm wrong. Please do.
I have a bad feeling I'm going to be revealed as the dumbest X-Files fan, that I'm the only one who didn't grasp this.
No, it's not. It's not true, because I literally, somebody just pointed out something to me today that I was like, that never occurred to me. And this is constantly happening with this show. So don't feel bad. I mean, it's not the kind of thing that everybody's going to grasp immediately. I'm an insane person. I've probably watched all these episodes way too many times. That's healthy. So, it's helpful, but it's probably not helpful for my mental health.
It's good. It's good for your mental health. I have a strong opinion that watching The X-Files is good for your mental health. So that's just... an aside, I had a conversation with my psychiatrist once about this because I felt like, was I watching The X-Files too much? He said, no, I am not watching The X-Files too much because, you know, I have an anxiety disorder, so I'm naturally going to obsess about something. So it might as well be The X-Files. So just saying, it's doctor approved.
It might as well be something that makes you happy, right?
Exactly. Because if it's not that, I'll be obsessed about something really dumb and scary. So it might as well be something awesome like The X-Files.
Right, exactly. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about, unless you have anything else to say about alien abductions for the moment, I wanted to talk about Smoking Man.
I'm just going to say I love alien abductions, and I really found everything to do with alien abductions, especially in the first season, super compelling as a concept. It was one of those things I was kind of into at the time. Back in the 90s, the idea of UFOs and abductions was still very hot. It's not as hot quite as much today. But back then it was like, you know, a lot of people for sure believed in all of this. And it was a very interesting subject to me. So I found that it was one of the things that really made the show compelling for me, in addition, of course, to the MSR.
That's interesting, too, because, you know, as people know, Jen, you watched it from the beginning, basically from the beginning. And I did not. Like, I came in as kind of a younger person, like, later in the show. And so to me, when I went back and watched, I was like, oh my God, this is all so cheesy. Oh my God, alien abductions are really, because it's amazing, like, what a difference a decade makes.
Yeah. You know
what
I mean?
Because, like, it really was part of the zeitgeist of the culture at the time. Like, people were afraid of it. And I mean, I don't think that was really a thing anymore by like season 8 or, you know, people enjoyed it in the context of the show, obviously, but I don't think it was like a real fear. And so I feel like, and again, that's another reason that the mythology has to continue to evolve. I mean, we've talked about this before. They could never have done the revival in any other time period because it needs to be in the times that we're living in for that those sorts of stories to work. I feel like in a way that kind of makes the X-Files a little bit timeless. They had to kind of deal with all of this in the revival, which I thought was actually a very impressive feat. All the shit that we give the revival, I mean, I think they did a really, really good job making it relevant.
The X-Files has always been about the zeitgeist. And when you're watching it as it airs, you're a little bit more sensitive to that, I think. But it's always been about, Chris Carter has always had, I think, a really profound talent for understanding what is on people's minds and capitalizing on that. On the X-Files in terms of what is scary, what is compelling. And that definitely changes over that 25-year period.
So Cigarette Smoking Man, we have him right off the top, Jen.
Yeah, we do.
And I love it because he self-admittedly, and even Carter, like, they're all like, we didn't really know what we were going to do with him. We just kind of wanted this kind of creepy guy in the background that we're like, who's this guy? What's he up to? And it's so effective. So effective. Like, he doesn't have to do anything. I mean, and I know in retrospect, it's really kind of creepy, but also kind of structurally sound how he's kind of looking at Scully, if that makes sense. But like when I'm watching it, it's so creepy and it's so like you don't need any explanation. I mean, if you explain Smoking Man too much, his mystique is gone. Like the terror of him is gone. And I think they did such a good job at kind of just saying, hey, let's throw this guy in. We aren't going to know what he's doing yet. We just know that he's very, very ominous. And then you don't see him again until the very, very end when he's like obviously putting all of the evidence in the, you know, I like to call it Raiders of the Lost Ark warehouse because, and it's super, God, it's so like, I love when they take especially with the mythology, they take the sort of realism of the fears that we have in the world and kind of combine it with this paranormal stuff to make you think, well, what is it really? Like, I don't know. And I think they always, always did that so well with this show. But they didn't have to really worry with Smoking Man what they were going to do with him because he evolved perfectly. Like, it was kind of like, hey, we got to use this guy again. He's fucking creepy. Like, you know.
Yeah, he was so great. I remember I think it was at the Montreal Comic Con, William B. Davis talking about, and I think he tells this story a few times at cons, that he felt like he got the lesser part in the pilot because, there's three people in Blevins' office when Scully is there at the beginning and the end. There's Blevins, there's Smoking Man, and there's some other guy, and I'm not even sure if he even has a name, but he gets the lines. He has lines.
Yes.
Whereas CSM doesn't. And so William B. Davis thought, well, here, I don't have much of a part because I don't even have the lines. But of course,
little
who turns
did he
out
know.
To have like, yeah, the role that's going to last for like 25 years. It turned into something much bigger because, yeah, he had no lines in the opening episode. And I still remember the first time when CSM spoke. It was a little bit disappointing because, like you said, the more you learn about him, kind of the less scary he gets in some ways. And I remember the first time he spoke, somehow his voice wasn't what I pictured. I don't know what I pictured.
Yeah, yeah. Deeper. Something deeper.
Yeah, like something more like, I don't know, like Darth Vader. If he sounded like anything less than Darth Vader, frankly, I was going to be a little disappointed. And so when he actually spoke, I was like, oh, he's just like a normal human being. I'm not too sure about this now.
But that's the scary part of it is when they take the mundane and they make it like he's just a normal dude. Like, and you're
well,
like,
this is it.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
He's really great in that pilot. I loved him from the beginning. Mm-hmm. He contributes a lot to the atmosphere of that episode, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And that end scene, I remember watching it. I didn't watch the pilot live as it aired. So kudos to those of you that were in on the X-Files from the very beginning, because I only caught on halfway through season one, but I caught the pilot on summer reruns. And I remember watching that final scene with filing away the chip in the huge warehouse in the Pentagon.
Yes.
And it's just like, it's such a what the fuck moment. It's just like, oh my God, that's in the Pentagon.
Well, I mean, it's right off the top. They are telling you who he works for.
Yeah.
And again, people sort of like, it's not that he works directly for the military, but obviously he's using the military as part of his, you know, plan.
Yeah. There's some connection there. There's some connection with the Pentagon.
With the freaking Pentagon. Yeah. I mean, we already know that there's shit going on at the FBI, which is pretty high up. But like the Pentagon is like, in a weird way, like the Pentagon feels kind of sacred. And so,
yeah,
it's a really great pilot. I love it. This is kind of one of those, like, this is the first time, I mean, right off the bat, we are talking about like cover-ups, like even in like the small town that they go to, like they're talking about how maybe the county coroner is like covering it up, though they're covering up these abductions. We don't really know why. They just don't want all the attention, or who knows? Like it's this sort of creepy. I love these sort of small town stories when you're like, what's going on in this town? Like they have this underbelly, they have these secrets.
And that element is, we see that right through the revival.
Yeah.
And it's so strongly there from the beginning, this kind of spooky small town stuff and sort of the uncooperative local law enforcement and all this kind of stuff going on. Love it. The template is so great from the beginning, and the pilot does it so well. We even get like running through the woods with flashlights in the rain. It's so X-Files. I love it.
And the idea too behind like a, you know, covering up, like just the idea of like the cleanup, like you know, even Scully is like, well, there goes my computer. Like she's sort of getting it, like, okay, they really are systematically removing everything that we are trying to use to solve this case. And you can see her through this one episode, her character, I mean, obviously Scully has a huge overarching character arc, but you can see her character go through an arc in this episode.
You can, yeah.
And it's wonderful to see, like he brings her aboard. It's really cool to see that. And I love the idea that they get to show the hotel burning down with the cleanup and like Mulder, he's mad, but it's like, he expects it. And as the series goes on, too, I love the more this sort of thing happens, the more he's just, of course.
Yeah.
And Scully is like,
sign that it's almost like a good thing. It's like a sign that we're getting somewhere.
Yes.
It's a sign that we're getting close.
We're getting close to the truth because they are getting rid of our stuff. Yeah. I think that's really cool. And they, again, all established right off the top.
I love the fact that you can even see the Scully's arc to me is in that episode is sort of represented by how she behaves in sort of the bookend scenes in Blevins' office when they're kind of grilling her a little bit. The first time she's in there when they assign her to the X-Files, she's very sort of naive and pleasant and polite and keen and kind of, you know, knocks Mulder ever so slightly. And then but in the final scene when she's in the office there, again, with the same people talking about the case at that point, she's so much more serious. She's so much more, she gets what's going on. She's not going to suck up to those guys anymore. She's onto it and she's onto them, and you can see it, and you can see that she's on Mulder's side then.
Yeah.
And her allegiance has clearly shifted, and she's a lot more suspicious of the FBI folks. And you can just see in the course of that episode the journey that she's taken. And, you know, really credit to Scully. Some people, I think, they don't really appreciate her character particularly profoundly. Think, oh, she's such a, you know, she doesn't believe anything. She dismisses everything. Scully's kind of stupid. But she gets on board pretty quickly with, like, there's something going on here. She just wants to have proof, and that is very sensible.
Right.
But so she's not, like, being resistant or... she's in no way kind of, you know, thoughtlessly dismissing the things that Mulder brings to her. She's really quite open-minded, actually, considering what her background is, considering what she's thrown into the middle of. She gets on board relatively quickly, I think.
Yeah.
And also, I think Mulder brings her on board, like you say, and he's pretty trusting of her right from the beginning, too. And so it's very interesting to see that dynamic and how it is shaped so clearly and so well in
right.
the pilot. The dynamic that carries through, and it doesn't feel like they're just playing these roles because we need a skeptic and we need a believer. It feels very credible and believable, and it works really well.
Well, and I think at the top, too, she's doing her job. Like,
yeah.
I don't hear the criticism from Scully that, like, oh, she's stupid. I do hear the criticism that, like, perhaps she's a bit too stubborn or she's a bit too close-minded. But I think I think from the beginning, it's pretty clear that she's eager. You know, she wants to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily use the word ambitious, but I wouldn't deny it either. It makes me think of the line that Doggett gives her when she meets him later in Within, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, I heard these rumors that you were ambitious and blah blah blah." Mm. And when I first heard that, I was like, "Really?" And then I'm like, "You know what? I think it's possible that maybe Mulder could have even suspected that from the start." But I think the progression of her defense of him, like you said, at the end of the pilot, and then even through to Deep Throat. How their relationship has progressed just in terms of trust, like that she has to literally rescue him, and then by the beginning then of Squeeze, I know that's not mythology, but by the beginning of Squeeze where she's like defending him to people that she probably laughed with.
Yeah.
Back, you know, and I love that. I mean, seriously, we've said it before. We can't sing the high enough praises of the first like five episodes of the X-Files. I feel like the first few are very solid and strong and have a really, really nice start to this show. And I think honestly, these two, besides the fact that David and Jillian are so fantastic, I feel like they owe a lot of these characters working so well to the fact that these first few episodes were so strong.
That's true. I mean, for some TV series, you know, oftentimes the question will be, if you want to introduce a new fan to a show, what episode would you start them with? And for a lot of shows, you would not start them with the pilot.
Right.
Because the pilot is often a little shaky. It's often got little to do with the direction that the series winds up going in. But I would definitely, if someone wanted to start on the X-Files, I'd say start with the pilot because it is exactly what the X-Files is. And there's obviously some, you know, a little, some things change over time, but it's a very strong foundation, excuse me, for the series.
Yeah.
It's a great place to start.
Totally. I wanted to talk about this idea of the testing that's done by the aliens in this case, or, you know, the government, who we know also does the testing. That actually leads to the genetic mutations within human bodies. Because we see this with this body and this grave, how it's kind of completely altered. Everything about it has altered. But the idea of these tests mutating your genes, it, right off the top, they are saying, hey, we're going to fuck with your genes. We're going to fuck with your DNA. This is all bad news. And I mean, this sort of idea persists throughout the series that, like, if you're getting tested, if you're getting abducted or whatever, this is going to mess with your DNA. And we see that with Scully. I mean, obviously we see it down the road with, we see it with a lot of these abductees, but I just wanted to point out too, that all of these ideas that are put out right away that continue throughout the entire series. I wanted to say too, cause I definitely want to talk about Requiem briefly because it's such a nice bookend to the pilot and we get all the same actors back. We get all the same characters back, which is super cool.
Awesome.
But I love the idea just the foresight, not that they knew that they were going to bring Billy Miles back, but this line that the nurse says, we could stand here until the second coming and he's not going to get out of this bed. And then Billy Miles literally later, 8 years later, like becomes the second coming. Like he's comes back to life, which I thought was actually a really kind of cool line that obviously there's no way they planned that. But it's one of those cool things that you look back on and you go, hey, that's really cool.
It just works out really well.
Yeah. I love when that happens because it's the little things like that that make me think, hey, they are paying attention a little bit.
Yeah, I like that. I never noticed that line, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The actual thing that's kind of happening with the kids and the abductions is still a little unclear to me. Like at the end of it, when he's carrying her to the woods, because I guess he's bringing all these kids to the woods. Some of them get taken and some of them don't. But then they're obviously not crazy. They're being treated like they're crazy, but they're not. And then they're suddenly cured. It's a little murky, but I mean, we do know that the aliens have healing properties, which is also established pretty quickly. But yeah, did you have any read on that, on kind of how the pilot ends?
Definitely not a super clear explanation, but that's totally fine with me.
Apropos.
It doesn't bother me. I wouldn't have wanted one. I've never really noticed how poorly explained the whole thing, I think, really is until I was watching it this week, kind of really focusing on the mythology aspects of the episode, because typically that is not what is forefront in my mind when I'm watching an episode.
Right.
And so I was really trying to focus on the sort of UFO stuff. And I was at the end kind of scratching my head and saying, so do we really understand all of this? Why were they going to the forest again? But I think it's not really super clear. You can kind of write your own explanation.
Right.
Well, and that's fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that I think what's cool, too, is the idea that he says when he's being hypnotized, Billy Miles, that he's afraid of being taken again.
Yeah.
And that seems like a kind of pervasive sort of fear among all these abductees.
So it is. And of course, it's very chilling because, of course, eventually he will be taken again. We know that.
Exactly. And I mean, I think that's kind of what the implants are about. It's a bit of a tracking. Yeah. Like they're kind of led places by the implants, as we know happens to Scully later in what is that, Patient X?
Yeah, Patient X, right in the block.
So those implants have the abilities to sort of get the abductees to where they need them to go, which is, I mean, again, to me is somewhat, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to point out too that Heitz Werber, the hypnotist, is the same dude that shows up in Patient X, which I don't think I ever really noticed that. Like, I knew it was the same guy, but I didn't realize that they had actually gotten the same actor back, which I thought was very impressive.
I know. I don't think I noticed it was the same actor either. And I knew that the name was familiar, but then I was like, hey, that's actually the same guy.
I didn't check Seinhard Zeit or Closer. I think it's Closer. If it was him hypnotizing Mulder, because you can hear him talking, but I don't know if it's that actor, but I would be really curious to go check and see if it is the same actor, because why the hell wouldn't it be? I mean, they got him back. So
I think I always thought it was the same actor, but I'm not totally sure about that. But that's my understanding for sure.
So you mean
that,
Enclosure?
I mean, that's terrific. Yeah, Enclosure,
I mean, you can't see him. You can only hear him. So, I mean,
based on his voice, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not good enough with voices to know that. I should have to go look it up.
I'm just going to assume that it is.
Yeah.
Because I just like that idea. Because, I mean,
cool.
That is great that they got him back again for Patient X and the Red and the Black to have the same hypnotist, the same person playing him. It's great. It's great that they did that, that there is this, sort of internal X-Files universe that has this internal logic, and there are people that live there. I love that.
It's nice to see, too, there's something to be said about the idea of getting all these same people back on your show over and over again. It's something to be said about the nice work environment that it must be.
Yeah.
You know, they must be, you know, they obviously wanted to get the same people back. There's a degree of loyalty there, which is just, I don't know, nice to see. When they didn't have to. I mean, nobody would have blamed them if they cast another dude to be the hypnotist. You know what I mean?
One would even have noticed.
No one would have noticed. Yeah. So, I mean, I just thought that was kind of a nice thing to see.
It's very cool. And yeah, he's one of those rare actors that comes back to play the same role more than once. Because a lot of the times, of course, we have people coming back playing multiple different roles. I don't know if he shows up playing anything else, but he does. He shows up playing himself more than once, playing his own role.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly lots of actors play lots of different roles. It's like its own little, like, I've heard it described as kind of like a company of actors that the X-Files production people like to be able to call on when they know that someone that they like, someone that they can rely on, and someone, obviously, like you say, who enjoys working on The X-Files. And, you know, it was, especially in the Vancouver days, there's probably, you know, a certain set of Vancouver actors that I kind of recognize sometimes from Canadian shows. And they pop up a few times on The X-Files and always do, you know, they always do an awesome job.
Yeah.
The little roles I always find are really well cast on The X-Files. And, yeah, they always pick really great people.
Do you have anything else to say about the pilot in terms of mythology? Because it kind of goes into Deep Throat really nicely.
It really does. And well, yeah, of course, Samantha's brought up in the pilot.
Oh,
and
yeah, that's that, kind of a big deal.
That's the big thing, of course, for you know, the first seven seasons for sure. Mm-hmm. And again, it's like it's all there right from the beginning. Mulder tells the story. I know some of the details of the story change a little bit over time, but the basic story remains the same. And again, it's right there from the beginning. And a very sort of compelling sort of element of Mulder's character and of Scully's connection to him and her sort of interest in him as a person and her interest in the X-Files. She really gets it from the beginning that this is a personal thing and that this matters and it raises the stakes. And I love that aspect of it too. So it's just one of those elements that's there from the beginning.
It's interesting to think that, like, if they had not had that conversation or that moment, their relationship would probably have gone an entirely different direction.
Yeah.
So you have to look at that scene as being just so important in terms of him deciding to even tell her. When I'm sure he's not, you know, screaming around to everybody that, hey, by the way, my sister got taken by aliens. You know, I mean, I'm sure this is like a big deal for him to kind of confide this in her. And he also might worry that, hey, you know, if I don't tell her, maybe she'll hear it from somebody else and then I'll just appear like a crazy person, even though he does appear a little crazy in that scene. But he's just so hot and adorable. I think she's like already like, you've got issues, but you're hot and I'm digging this. No,
I'm whatever, honey, just keep talking. I just like being here right now.
Yeah, because it's some of the lines, the way he, like, he's just so intense. And I mean, that's just Baby Mulder. We love Baby Mulder. But like, she does not even flinch. She is just mesmerized by him.
She is mesmerized by that whole story. And why not? I would be too.
And she doesn't give him shit for it either, which I love it. It's like, this is the one moment. It's like when Mulder's talking about something that's very personal to him, she's not going to eye roll. She's not going to scoff. She's just listening. And I think that's kind of a really important distinction to make in terms of when they're talking about personal things, which is rare. And when they're on a case talking about, you know, paranormal shit. So
yeah, that's a really good point, because Scully does more than her fair share of eye rolling throughout all of season one, especially.
Oh yeah.
You're right. She has a very different demeanor during that story, which is, you know, one that she would, if anyone else were telling it, she would be very sort of like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she's not buying necessarily what Mulder is selling, but she's. But she doesn't tell him that, obviously, and she's still very sympathetic. And she, whether she believes what Mulder believes about what really happened to Samantha, she definitely understands his feelings and understands the impact on him.
Right, the loss and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So she gets that and she appreciates that and she is empathetic towards it. And so it's a wonderful sort of bonding for the two of them.
And
you're right that it's so striking that Mulder is so open about that and trusting, really, of Scully from the beginning. For a guy who's all about trust no one, he really is very trusting towards Scully right from the beginning, which is very sort of touching and beautiful.
But I think that's kind of an interesting dichotomy of Mulder, because I think he says he's not going to trust people, but he wants to. Like, really badly. I mean, we see that all with Diana. Like, we see that all go to shit. And so it's one of those things that, like, you know that he wants to believe. He wants to, like, trust people. Yeah. And so, and he puts his faith in people. And then he gets so bent out of shape, like, personally, like, when his contacts, like, don't help or when they leave. Or, like, you know, I love Baby Mulder so much. But I was going to say something about Scully in terms of the attitude that she does take. This is my last thing to say about the pilot. The attitude she does take with him whenever they're discussing Samantha, continues throughout the series, that her, all of the eye rolling, all of that goes away when they're talking about that, because she, she turns on her kind of mama bear, like, protective with Mulder when we're talking about this, because she knows how hard he takes it and how personally he takes it. And I love that. I mean, we see that so often, that essentially, or that, like, as soon as, like, he is talking about anything that might have something to do with his sister, she's just like, dude, you need to be careful. I'm worried about you. And and it's just, it's more of a concern when she's talking to him about that than a skepticism. You know what I mean? And I like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that. I think that's a very lovely dynamic between the two of them, which replays every time Samantha comes out throughout the series. Yeah. And it always touches my heart whenever that happens. So I love that. And the last thing I'm going to say about the pilot is shout out to 11:21. It's the first time we see the time 11:21 in the series when Scully wakes up at the end. First of all, clearly Scully goes to bed way earlier than I do if she's like sound asleep at 11:21. But we see it again like at the end of this season and maybe a couple of other times. I'm just very into 11:21 as a time.
For the record, she goes to sleep way later than I do. probably right smack in the middle. I have small children, so that's late for me.
You're on kid time for sure. Yeah. I don't know how you and I ever managed to find a time that we could both podcast together, because I stay up so late and you go to bed at a very reasonable time.
Well, that's exactly why, because whenever I can do it, you're already awake, so it's all good. We did forget to mention something that is important and will come up, which was the loss of time. The 9 minutes, the loss of time. I don't want to talk about it too much, but I just want to bring it up because it is something that comes back. I think it's just kind of one of those cool things that is like in alien abduction lore, you know, that like, when this sort of weird stuff happens, you lose time. And we obviously will deal with that again later in the series, but I just wanted to bring it up because it is kind of interesting, and they definitely dip back into that well later. So
they do, it is a very significant part of, like you say, the UFO lore, and it's another one of those things that they managed to squeeze in that pilot.
Yeah,
they squeeze so many elements in there, and some of them are very much in passing, like you were talking with the DNA thing. That's very much in passing.
Yes,
you have to kind of really pay attention to catch that, but they still managed to stuff it in there. The pilot is stuffed with so many references that will pay off down the road.
Yep, absolutely. And into Deep Throat. And I have to tell you, every time I watch Deep Throat, I always am like, how is this not on like my favorite episodes list? It's so good. Like
it's a really strong good episode.
Yeah. And I mean, again, you know, you've heard me talk all the time about the freaking music. I love the music. Like I can hear it in my head, and it's just so eerie and creepy and 90s and cool.
Yeah.
And I love it. But this is where it started with Deep Throat. And I think this is cool because we're kind of dealing with a different topic, like the same thing. Like this is definitely mythology, but we're now kind of going deep into sort of more of a military government type theme. Like this is what's actually going on in the real world that is being covered up. Or hidden from the American public. And I love the idea that right off the bat, here we are, episode 2, they're already introducing the idea of the government stealing alien technology.
Yeah.
Right off the top. And I mean, this is the shit that they're talking about way into the revival. You know, the idea of all these spacecraft and, you know, experimental spacecraft that even you know, Dreamland season 6, like we're dealing with that. Like we're talking about Roswell, we're talking about crashed UFOs, we're talking about retrieved UFOs and using that technology to make these sort of, you know, crazy stealth bombers or whatever. It's super cool, and it's definitely one of those things that I'm like, I'm never out there like in the woods looking for, you know, sorry, that's my cat, that's new kitty Scully.
Hi, Scully. Welcome to the podcast, Scully. Yes. This might be your first appearance, I think.
This is Scully's first appearance. Sorry to interrupt my train of thought, but she is playing
some
sort of toy.
We will always take a short interruption for cats.
Yes, they love it. You know, they can't stay away. They love the show. So,
yeah.
But I totally lost my train of thought. But just the idea of the alien tech is cool. And we're already getting into this. Episode 2, you know?
Yeah, it's so great. And yeah, it is like a really core thing that it really does resurface quite strongly in the revival, like almost more strongly in the revival than through much of the rest of the first 9 seasons. Yeah. So it's and it's very cool stuff. And like all of that Area 51 Roswell stuff was very big back in the 90s, too. I remember I read a book about Roswell. I was so interested in that whole like crashed UFO stuff. It was, and it just fits right in with that.
Totally. And I feel like it was also one of those things that because it happened in the revival so prominently that a lot of people were like, where's this coming from? You know, and I was like, well, it's kind of, it's always been there. The idea that like maybe the aliens weren't around, it was just the tech, you know, maybe that's what we're dealing with now. And again, it's still unclear, but that's the X-Files. But I really liked that. I liked the idea that I don't know. I just love the whole feel of Deep Throat. Like, when I'm watching it, I can hear the craft like speeding through the air, and just it's just so cool. I love it. Obviously, we get to meet Deep Throat. Obviously, Mulder's first contact, or is it? Because I mean, he seemed. We know for sure that and this isn't a super important part of the mythology, but it's an extremely interesting part that we know Mueller's been. He's got contacts in Congress through Senator Matheson, who obviously is like, you know, maybe he's like a NASA nerd or something. I don't know, but like he's super into the idea of Mulder out there doing this, and so he's like funding him or something, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that like he's helping him too. We don't really get to see Matheson until when do we see Matheson for the first time?
Is Little Green Men the first time we see him?
Yeah, I think it is. But like we hear about him in the pilot. Yeah. Like Mulder says, I have my connections in Congress. So it's like we know that this is a thing that's happening. So again, like we don't meet Matheson until season 2, but he's there. He's one of Mulder's informants. Is he a member of the syndicate? Maybe. Who knows? Yeah. We never really know too much about Matheson, which I think is really interesting. But I think he's a cool character. And I know I don't want to talk about him too much because he's not really in this episode. But because we're talking about informants, I mean, we have Deep Throat, Jerry Hardin. Love him.
Love him.
Great character. And wait, a little bit of trivia that just popped into my head. And I have to say this because I just found this out the other day and it blew my mind. Right. His... I think daughter is Melora Hardin, who plays Jan on The Office.
No way, really?
Yes, I think his daughter, they're related. I think it's his daughter or
it's awesome.
Yeah, I was like, and I have to look it up for sure. I'm like, maybe I'm getting my math wrong, but I know they're related. And I was like, oh my God, I had no idea. And that's amazing. What a cool connection to like two of my favorite shows. Anyway,
honestly,
total tangent, but I had to bring that up. Because I love Jan. Serenity by Jan. Anyway, sorry. I freaking love The Office.
I'm just going to say, I think that if we were to do a Venn diagram of fans of The X-Files and fans of The Office, it would overlap quite a bit.
It seems like there's a
lot of my X-Files friends are into The Office.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. But I love The Office. Deep Throat, I wanted to say real quickly, is this first conversation he has with Mulder in the bathroom of the bar, I think has a lot more impact than we give it credit for in terms of Mulder and his quest, because this is the moment when Mulder has the opportunity to tell Scully what Deep Throat has said and see if she herself wants to take these risks on.
Yeah.
And he never does. And I'm not blaming him for that. I don't want people to come after me because I would never once blame Mulder for anything that happened to Scully, because I do think that all of her choices were her own. But I do think that this probably weighed on Mulder more heavily than we realize. Because it was one of the, like, he gets it. And then at the end of this episode, he loses lots of his memories. So I kind of can like fan wink it that way, that maybe he's like, you know what I mean? Like maybe he's like, oh, I don't quite remember what was said to me or you know, but I find that super interesting that he has given this sort of grim warning and he doesn't share that with Scully. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, because he does mention having encountered Deep Throat, I think, sort of towards the end of the episode, but only I think in the context of...
To Scully? No, I don't think that he... I don't think he tells her about Deep Throat yet.
That was my understanding. Maybe he's referring to something else, something where he says, I need the transcript. It's something about, I was warned about something before we left DC, like, i.e., I think in the context of they knew we were coming or something like that. And
I don't remember that. Being watched. But I don't remember that, but I know in Eve, which is not a mythology episode, so we're probably, well, I mean, technically it kind of is, but we're not really probably going to be talking about that in this rewatch, but I can bring it up now. He's hiding him from Scully. Remember, like, he meets him secretly, and and so I feel like, and again, this is again one of those things that, like, Mulder is hiding stuff from Scully all the time. Like, he's not telling her everything. I just, like, every time people are like, why wouldn't Mulder have told Scully XYZ? I'm like, he hides shit from her all the time. That's
his go-to. Yes. He's just, his default mode is, I'm not going to tell Scully. He just tends not to.
And I think it's more, I want to believe it's more out of a protective thing than anything else. Like, maybe the less she knows about this, the more I can sort of keep her safe.
I think so. Yeah.
And so I can kind of forgive him that. But I mean, it's right off this sort of conditional trust is established right off the top, you know, with the two of them. So it's just interesting to point out. But I think Deep Throat, and we don't know anything about Deep Throat, I want to say, until, is it EBE, when we learn a little bit more about Deep Throat?
We learn a little bit more about him. We never really learn a lot, but yeah, we learn a little bit more about him in EBE. We'll probably talk about that.
Yeah, when we learn more about him, like, and his relationship with Bill Mulder. So it's kind of one of those things that now makes sense in retrospect, like, why he's seeking Mulder out. Like, why he's like, look, I can't do anything about this. It's too late for me, but hey, you're out there doing your thing. And I kind of like that. I really like that.
And Jerry Harden just plays him so great, doesn't he? Because Jerry Harden has this natural sort of folksy, fatherly, friendly, charming manner. But he can also somehow slip in something just a little sinister under the surface.
Yeah.
And he does that brilliantly.
And you don't really know. I mean, and he does a good job of making you want to trust him. Like, Mulder wants to trust him so badly.
Yeah.
But you don't know. Like, you still don't know, because even when we see these scenes of him, like, with Smoking Man or with other people, where you're like, oh, should we be trusting him? Who knows? And I think they continue to do that just to kind of keep it interesting, which is great.
Yeah, and absolutely. You can see why Mulder would trust him, because he does seem like a trustworthy guy. If he was super sketchy, then Mulder would seem super naive and kind of dumb. But yeah, he seems like he's the kind of guy I would trust him. He seems like a trustworthy guy to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, he seems to know what he's talking about. So yeah, absolutely. It's so beautifully cast. I just love Jerry Harden in that role, and I love Deep Throat.
Yeah.
He should have lasted more than one season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they bring him back later, but, you know, we don't need to talk
about
that.
They do in a way.
We don't need to talk about that yet. Anyway, Scully, I realized too, I was talking about kind of her arc in these first few episodes in terms of her relationship with Mulder. I mean, she seems really hard. Like, she seems to be trying really hard to help Mulder look better to the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and again,
That's important to her.
It's important to her. I mean, I feel like you also can get the feeling that maybe she's just trying to make sure she doesn't look foolish, which I feel like by season 7, when we're talking about, like, ex-cops, when she straight out says to him, look, she's like, I don't care about you anymore. Like, I just don't want to look like an idiot. I mean, they've reached a point in their relationship where she can say that. But I mean, a lot of this is like, this is so early that I feel like she enjoys this partnership. I think she enjoys this assignment, this beat, so to speak. And she doesn't really want to lose it. And so I feel like that's her way of kind of saying, hey, cut it out, you know, follow the rules, and then we can keep doing our stuff. Like, this is cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, she's exactly. She's perfect in that role for Mulder, to have someone who's just, you know, reminding him, okay, now back in the real world, just remember how this is going to look.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that she's very much sort of we and us about all of that from the beginning. It's about, you know, how is this going to make us look? It's very much, she sees herself, like you say, as part of the partnership and part of the team from the beginning. And it matters to her, and he matters to her. And she thinks of everything that impacts on him as impacting on her. She's not just there as some kind of a temporary little fly-in spy. She really does see herself as part of the X-Files and from the beginning, and I love that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that the cool thing about this, you know, the first episode we were kind of dealing with alien abductions. I feel like in Deep Throat we're kind of dealing more with the actual, like, the military. I feel like they're really trying to set up the military as one of the sort of biggest forces behind the wrongdoing, which it feels kind of disturbingly accurate, I would say. It's one of those things that we are, like, to those of us not in the military, me, it does feel kind of mysterious. Like, what are they doing over there? Like, what sort of weapons are they making? Why is so much of our fucking money going there? Like, these are all the things that I think. And I mean, I know it's different in the United States, I'm sure, than it is in Canada. But these are the things that, like, I think about. And it makes it interesting to me that they're setting them up as this. I mean, they set it up in the pilot with the Pentagon. We know that they're involved. But the idea of kind of how they are, like, they're kind of taking in this sort of the treatment of veterans sort of as a topic that, hey, we're going to talk about this. Like, this is how the veterans are going to all be crazy, because of course they were up in flying saucers and they were testing out all these experiments. You know, it's kind of cool how they're trying to sort of explain it away. I don't think it's not cool, but you know what I mean? It's just interesting the way that they're kind of like, well, maybe this is what's really going on. Like, maybe this is why this is happening.
It's interesting how, you know, and like you say, the military is definitely represented as, you know, a somewhat sinister secret force, right. But also, like you say, the treatment of the veterans, the individual members of the military are also shown as victims of that as well. And so we can see that, you know, they're not just, you know, one big bad group. There are, you know, good people who get caught up in this.
Right.
And are mistreated as a consequence of it. And that they have committed themselves to this calling and in the end feel that they have been mistreated as well as the wider public that is sort of being the secrets are being hidden from the public. There's all kinds of things going on we hardly know at this point. And so the wider public is kind of being victimized by the military, but so are the individual members, which is kind of an interesting sort of a slightly more sort of nuanced view of it, which I appreciate. And yeah, certainly the discussion about vets as a theme, it comes up repeatedly throughout the whole X-Files, right into the revival. Yeah. It's obviously a subject that is interesting to Chris Carter and very compelling, very compelling.
Right. It's interesting too that I feel like the military, the way the military is sort of treated in the X-Files, it's almost like the way that the syndicate deals. It's like a more vast version of the way the syndicate operates. Like, it's, you got these guys at the top and they're telling the cry checks of the group.
Yeah.
You don't ask questions. You just listen to orders. You follow orders.
That's right.
I feel like the military is kind of performing that role in the real world on the X-Files. You see this all the time over and over again throughout these mythology episodes, or even the non-mythology episodes, where the military is sent in to clean up something. And you think constantly, you always think about, like, these people, like, they probably have no idea what they're actually covering up. They just do it. You know what I mean? I'll watch a lot of these episodes where I'm just like, there's so many guys and they're cleaning up this stuff that's so sensitive, that, like, that's classified, but they don't know. Like, they probably have no clue what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just thought it's kind of an interesting concept that these are officers, like, these are soldiers. They're out in the world doing this stuff that's probably bad, but they don't realize that they're doing it. You know?
Yeah.
And just the idea of that is frightening. I think they deal with that really well, even in this episode, like, where she, you know, the guy comes back. It makes me think of even, like, the alien replicants in, like, you know, Requiem and on, when we start dealing with the alien replicants. She's like, I don't know what's wrong with this guy, but he's not my husband.
It's very interesting. It's interesting to see sort of the sort of slight contrast between the two military wives in this story that, you know, they're both obviously creeped out by the fact that something has happened to their husbands. But, you know, the one who calls in the FBI is much more sort of skeptical about the military and more willing to believe that perhaps the military has been up to no good.
Right.
Whereas the other military wife is a bit more sort of trusting and
drink
sort
of the
appreciative. Yeah, she's drunk the Kool-Aid a little bit and is very, you know, rah-rah military. You know, they're doing right by us.
Yeah.
They volunteer for this, and she doesn't feel like this is something that is worthy of concern or investigation, and is quite offended by the concept. So I think that's probably a pretty accurate representation of how people who are, you know, military wives and probably members of the military to a certain extent as well, that they represent a gamut of people. Some are very trusting and some are not trusting at all. Yeah. And so there's you get all kinds of different kinds of people who wind up swept up in this.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like the idea that there's these two kind of different ends of the spectrum here for that. Like, mm-hmm. And that's cool that like they had time to represent both.
Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah. Yeah. The fact that they could squeeze that in and so efficiently, the characterization is so strong and the acting is really strong to kind of convey that in just a couple of scenes.
Yeah. No, totally good. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, really strong storytelling throughout Deep Throat. It's just such a compact little episode, sort of like the pilot that way, but Deep Throat even more strongly, that they just pack a lot of story into one episode, and I love that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I need to give a shout-out to Seth Green.
Oh, my God. How awesome is he in this episode?
It's one of those things that you forget. Like, you forget yes. that he's in this. He's so great.
I love him. He's so, I mean, I love Seth Green anyway, but, you know, The X-Files has a history of sort of picking up on actors when they're quite young, before they become famous. They obviously had a good eye for these actors that turned into, you know, really famous people down the road. Mm-hmm. And he's just so fun in this episode. Just like when he's talking about, he's perfect.
So believable.
About, you know, all the, what his theories are. And his theories are actually pretty well thought out, actually. He's one of the ones that, because it's one of those interesting episodes that there are a couple of different very plausible explanations for what's going on here. And interestingly enough, he doesn't actually think it's UFOs. He thinks that it's a military aircraft.
Yeah.
And he has like a very interesting theory about that.
And he's thrilled with it.
He's really pleased with it. And I love the way he tells it, like, you know, dude. And it's so like, but he's not like, you know, a stereotypical stoner in the sense that he has like no clue what's going on. He actually, I think the way he tells the stories and his theories are really very interesting. So
he's very involved. Yeah.
He's really involved. And I just really love him. And you can kind of tell that, you know, Mulder and Scully find him kind of charming too. Yeah. And why wouldn't you?
How would you not? No, I had to give him a shout out because I hear him. I hear his voice every day at work because he plays Chris Griffin and I work at Family Guy. And I have to do a little bit of a little name drop because I do have a picture of him holding my baby, which is pretty funny.
Oh, my God. I'm so jealous right now.
I'll have to tweet it.
Good for you.
Yeah, because he's, you know, he's great. I've met him several times and he's a short guy. I mean, we talk about Jillian being extremely small. Seth Green is a short guy. He's super sweet, though. Really nice guy.
Oh, my God. That's so cool. Can I just say fangirl squee? Very cool. That's a cool story.
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny because I don't go back to Deep Throat very often. So whenever I watch it, I go, oh, it's Seth Green. That's so funny.
I'm glad you brought him up too, because I love him in this episode. Yeah. Love it. Love it.
And then it leads into like probably one of the really good MSR scenes of the first season when they're in the car and they're talking about if I were that stone. Oh, if you were that stone, what? Like,
That's very flirty.
It's probably the first time. I want to say maybe it's the first time that they interact in that way. Would you agree with that?
I think to that extent, certainly. I mean, they're so, throughout the first season, I find their banter is very laid back and fun and jokey. And Scully is just smiling up a storm, which is great. And this is a great early example of that for sure. I think, one of the first for sure. And it's just, it's very fun. And I love that whole thing. And she's playing along. She's loving it. And why wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's true. It's like we're in episode two and their dynamics are already so well developed. Like, right. She already is comfortable saying to him, Mulder, you're crazy. Like, and I know you're going to know that I'm joking, like already. Yeah. So it's just, it's nice. It's cute. It's really a cute scene.
So sweet. I just love, I mean, you know, chemistry is a word that, you know, a lot of the times we use it for like sexual chemistry, but you know, they also have just this great chemistry in terms of the banter, in terms of how they connect as characters and people. It's there from the beginning. As well as kind of, I mean, honestly, the sexual tension is there from the very beginning too, let's be honest.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, of course.
But the friendship chemistry is there too. And it's also very charming and very sweet.
I know. Oh God, they're so cute. Oh,
I love them. Babies. Baby Mulder and baby Scully. How adorable are they?
They're precious.
Precious. I want to put them in my pocket.
Yes. I wanted to bring up the only other thing really that they, that kind of an ongoing theme that they do talk about in the mythology is the idea of sort of messing with your memory. Removing memories or replacing memories. I mean, they talk about the aliens doing this, and then obviously they talk about we you know, the government's able to do this too, and this is sort of the first example that we actually see of it in action. God, I forget that Mulder gets into this sort of intense situation so early in the series.
For real, eh? Right? It's a classic Mulder breaking into a government facility right from the get-go.
Yeah, and I mean,
it's... And ditching Scully, as always.
Yeah, this is probably ditching number... Was this the first ditch?
I think this is the first ditch, I think so.
Yeah, and I mean, she already is just like, ugh. Like, she's like, yeah. I know this is going to keep happening, I can tell.
Yeah, but she's like, oh, for fuck's sake. It's like, she's not, like, personally offended or anything. It's just like, yep, should have seen this coming.
Mulder. Yeah, no, I love it. Like, already, it's so cute. Yeah. But anyway, what's not cute is what happens to Mulder at the base.
Seriously.
Because they take him in and like, man, they're injecting him with shit and they're pulling him through. Like, he sees the craft, but like, again, it's like it's all muddy about what he's actually going to remember. I love these sort of scenes where the viewer gets to see it. Like, the viewer is like, well, there's something I see. There's definitely some weird ship. Like, I couldn't tell you if it's a military craft or a spaceship. Like, I couldn't tell you, but there's something there. That's for sure.
Just murky enough that you can't tell for sure, but you know it's something.
Yeah, and again, they're so good at that, at making you kind of question what exactly you're seeing. Obviously, I mean, and the guy says, he's like, all of this, everything that you've seen here is proportionate or to the protection we give it, or whatever he says which is, it's kind of a nice bookend to what Scully said earlier when she said the government's not above the law, or she also says that the we shouldn't be asking these questions, like the government has a right and a responsibility to sort of keep these secrets.
It's an interesting point. I mean, like, that's obviously, you know, a little bit, we don't hear that from Scully a whole lot as the series goes on, but it's presented as a very valid position in this episode and totally understandable. And I think, again, maybe this is sort of a thing of the times that people maybe did tend to kind of want to believe in the government and want to trust the government while still being suspicious of it. I mean, I think in the times perhaps that we're in now, people are kind of like, the idea of trusting the government seems almost like laughably ridiculous.
Yeah.
And has been for, you know, quite a few years, not just because of the most recent developments in the U.S.
Right.
But at the time, I think the idea of, you know, the government has a right to its secrets did not seem like a crazy idea and seemed like a totally valid point of view.
Yeah.
And so it's presented as kind of like another valid argument. And so it's interesting. It's interesting the way that that is done.
And it's also interesting to see her with all of this history ahead of her that we already know.
Yeah.
To see her deliver that line and still... watch her deliver that line and still completely buy it. 1993 Scully, is so green and she's so new to all this that she has no idea what she's in for.
She does not know what's coming. But it's almost kind of charming how naive she is. But, you know, in many ways, she speaks for the viewer because, you know, the average viewer would see it the same way that Scully does.
Right.
And so, you know, to us, she seems kind of like weirdly naive. But at the time, of course, it would seem totally rational and a very valid perspective. But yeah, it's interesting to watch her. That's for sure. How it is sad in some ways to watch these early episodes and really the whole first season knowing what's coming because you know, they are unmarked by time at this point, and they're so happy, and the stakes are so much lower, and it's a very different, they're very different characters, it's a very different story, and it's kind of poignant to think about what's coming, which, of course, to my angst lover's heart, I very much enjoy. But it's interesting, you know, with all of the history that we wind up getting with the X-Files, going back and watching the first episodes in the first season is just enriched by what comes later, which is great because not every TV show can you do that. Some TV shows, you go back and watch the first season and all you do is cringe the whole time at how badly it was done and how it has nothing to do with really what the series turned into. But with the X-Files, you can go back to the first season and knowing what happens, see it in a different way and have it have more emotional resonance, which is great.
Well, and that being said, it just frustrates me when I hear the critique that the X-Files doesn't have that sort of cohesiveness. Because I think it does. I really do. I mean, yeah, we are here to say that they made mistakes. We are here to say that.
Oh, gosh.
But I mean, overall, there's a really nice balance from what we have at the very beginning to even up till the very end. And like you said, I think several episodes of the podcast ago, that even the themes of this have always been, it's always been thematically consistent. Yeah. And I can really appreciate that looking back. I actually had a little exercise I wanted to do really quick because this just Woo-hoo! Occurred to me. When you're talking about the characters and how we traveled with them, like how many other shows, I can't think of any that have traveled with their characters for 25 years.
Oh, honestly, I mean,
think of season one, Mulder and Scully. Just picture them.
Yeah.
Now think of season four, Mulder and Scully.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that change.
Yeah.
And now think of season seven, Mulder and Scully, and that change. Yeah. Yeah. And then now think of season nine, finale. Think of I Want to Believe. Think of the revival. And I mean, we got all these versions of Mulder and Scully that remained thematically consistent. And
yeah, it all makes perfect sense. As you know, for the times that they're in, for the context that they're in, for the age that they are.
Right.
I've said before that I'm the same age as Mulder and Scully, and so it always really resonated with me every time we got to revisit them again.
Yes.
And I love that about the X-Files. There's a lot of things I love about the X-Files, but especially with the revival, the fact that we could actually have a real journey with these characters over such a long period of time and have the same actors and to have it so consistent and to have these characters make, to me, so much sense in terms of their motivations and their behavior and their relationship. And, you know, the fact that you can have a season 10 and 11 where they show flashbacks to something from season 2, and you don't have to pretend that these are the same characters. We don't have to take the actors and try to make them up to make them look younger. We can just pull the footage from the 90s, and there are those exact same actors, and they look so much younger. And you can have a real live flashback to something that happened 20 or 25 years earlier in their lives as characters. Yeah. And it works and it's thematically consistent. And I've always loved that about the X-Files. The X-Files has kind of like traveled with me through my life, and we've traveled with these characters through their lives in real time. And I adore that about the X-Files.
Yeah. I had only a couple more things to say about Deep Throat. First of all, the idea that the aliens have been here for a long, long time, which is what Deep Throat says at the end, which is extremely consistent. I mean, we find out in Biogenesis season 6 that they're ancient, in fact.
Yeah.
Which you know, tracks. Oh my God, I'm sorry, you guys. Scully, my cat, is crazy. There's a toy of some sort that she's batting around. She's a kitten, you guys. She's extremely excited. Anyway, the only other thing...
She's a fan of Deep Throat, so that's understandable.
Right. I mean, she doesn't know him yet, but she will.
Yeah, fair enough.
At some point, in a little bit. The only other thing I wanted to say was the quote at the end when he's asking, Deep Throat's asking Mulder, why are people who believe in this stuff not dissuaded by all the evidence to the contrary? And Mulder's response is, because all the evidence to the contrary is not entirely dissuasive. Mm. And I think that is such a great quote, because that's the X-Files. That's every time you think you have a handle on what you think is going on, even when you're talking about Mulder and Scully, even when you're talking about what's going on with them, you can't quite get there because we don't have all of the evidence that we need, you know?
Yeah.
But there's just enough room for doubt. And I mean, you can look at it from that perspective. You can take that when you're looking at aliens, which is what Deep Throat and Mulder are talking about. So I really liked that quote. I thought that was great.
That's awesome.
I have about Deep Throat. Do you have anything else to say about Deep Throat?
I love that conversation between Mulder and Deep Throat at the end. It's like, it is like a real sort of classic conversation that just so establishes the X-Files forever, you know, that moment. Yeah. Like you quoted with Deep Throat saying, you know, Mr. Mulder, they've been here for a long, long time. I remember again, when the first time I saw that, being like, oh my God, what's happening right now?
Yeah.
It just really like brings things home. Like, oh my God, this is all so much scarier than I thought.
Oh my God.
So I love that line. I love that moment. And it's classic. It's just a classic X-Files moment. It's a classic X-Files episode, and it does tend to get overlooked quite a bit, I think, whether it's because it comes right after the pilot. And so we tend to kind of focus more on the pilot, and then maybe we're just in a rush to skip to Squeeze or something like that. But don't skip Deep Throat, because it's a very strong episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, we got kick-ass Scully in this. Scully is kicking serious ass in Deep Throat. So if you like kick-ass Scully like I do, she is there from the beginning, beating up the boys, and I love it.
You know, I got to say, I put out on Twitter, because somebody, I don't remember who it was like talking about my pick from the underrated episodes that we were talking about a few weeks ago. Being one of my picks being The Gift, and I revealed, you know, as I did on the podcast, that I just did that to piss you off. So you know what, since that's not a real pick, I'm gonna put Deep Throat in that slot, because I do think that Deep Throat is actually a probably rather unsung episode.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. Yeah. It is an unsung episode, and yeah, every time I watch it, I totally agree with you that I'm like, damn, this is a good episode. And just like one of the things I like about the especially the first season is that oftentimes the mythology episodes are one episode. We're not trying to do a two or three parter. And sometimes, you know, packing everything into one episode works really well. And I like the way that this is just one episode. They pack a lot in. It all happens. It's really well structured.
Yep.
It's really compelling. I love all that UFO stuff. It's a great episode, and yeah, if you haven't watched Deep Throat in a while, definitely go back and watch it again and enjoy it.
I have to do a couple more quick shout outs to extremely hot, sweaty Mulder at the end here.
Worth a mention. Totally.
And also, on a more serious note, I like the idea that they actually kind of revisit this scene in, I believe it's season 8. With Doggett and Noel Rohr when they are meeting. What a cool little idea to be like, hey, let's have Doggett meet his informant at the track, just like Mulder did. Like, maybe something people don't catch, but I mean, maybe they do. Mm. Maybe it's super obvious. But I just remember thinking, what a cool little callback, especially considering that was like towards the end of, you know, Mulder's arc.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that was in Essence. I could be wrong, but one of those season 8. You're more versed in season 8 than me, but I think it was one of those.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I think it was, yeah, Essence existence somewhere in there.
But just a nice, another little bit of, you know, visual nice. Continuity. Yeah, I like it.
It is, and you know, that's the kind of thing that rewards the longtime fan, because the average viewer's not going to pick up on that, but you know, the fanatic will say, oh my God, it's just like the track. So
yes.
I love that. I love it when fans get rewarded.
Ooh, well, you know, Jen, I am really super, super freaking excited to continue this journey of mythology. Did you have any like final thoughts before we wrap it up here? Or
I'm just going to say that I love these two episodes. I think if there was a graph drawn of my love of the mythology, it might be a steady downhill right from the beginning. But honestly, it starts really high, because I love the mythology in season 1, and it starts right from the pilot and Deep Throat. I love both of these episodes, and I love the stories, and I love the mythology at this stage. It's very compelling to me. It's stuff that I'm naturally interested in. I love the idea of government conspiracies and UFOs, abductions, all that stuff. Really fascinating. So I really love this, the mythology. The season 1 mythology tends to be my favorite, and these two episodes exemplify that really well.
Yeah, I think we probably should have said this at the top of the episode, but both pilot and Deep Throat were written by Chris Carter. And I think there aren't very many mythology episodes in season 1. So I think, Jen, if you're cool with it, I think we should come back and do Fallen Angel and Eve for our next because they're monster of the weeks, but they're both kind of very much wrapped into the mythology.
Definitely.
I think we should.
Yeah, season 1 is really interesting in that the mythology episodes are not as distinctive as they tend to get as the series goes on.
Yes.
It's kind of like it's all a little mixed together, mythology and standalone, the Monster of the Week stuff, which is really cool to me. So, yeah, I'm all for you know, let's throw some more season one episodes in there. I love season one, so let's do it.
Yeah, I'm fine kind of throwing in anything that that might have something interesting to add to the...
Yeah,
and I think both of those episodes actually will. So
I love both of those episodes. Fallen Angel, a UFO story again. Mm, can't wait to talk about it.
And Eve with kind of the eugenics and that angle, which starts off right at the beginning. Cool. So,
and I mean, Deep Throat's in it. Deep Throat is in it, so that makes it a mythology episode.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, for... Well, cool. Well, thanks you guys for listening, and please hit us up again on Twitter at @XFDpodcast. If you love listening to us, leave us a review, 5-star, please. We appreciate it on iTunes. And that helps, like I said, that helps people find us. It's great to have all the reviews and tweets that we're getting. We really love to hear from you guys. We love when you participate in the show. Give us ideas for things you want to hear us talk about. Anything at all.
We're open.
Yeah, and until next time, we will see you guys on another episode of X-Files Diaries.
Bye!